Hello there, I'm George Wright. I'm a senior producer in the development bit of BBCI, which is what interactive TV and new TV technologies of the future is called this month. Some of you might remember that last year's Nofcon spoke a little bit about why interactive TV was on the web, why that was a good thing. This year I'm pleased to say that we've got a couple of examples of stuff that you can do with TV streams that are available all around now, in some cases not needing a net connection, just needing commodity PC parts. I'm joined here by Dominic Ludlam, the Ludlam family, who will be showing us Pandora's Box, and Stephen Jolly of Kings of War on the Search and Development part of the BBC, who's going to be showing us various bits of what happens when you poke around the broadcast stream. The stuff we do in interactive TV at the moment is divided up into two areas, I suppose. One is the consumer-facing stuff, press and red on Sky, on Freeview, or in some cases on cable. Gives you information, multi-stream, you're probably aware of some of that sort of goes. The second thing that we're looking at is kind of what happens next after that. There's a lot of talk in the BBC and outside about ways that new tech can change viewing habits, ways it's going to destroy the schedule, yada yada yada. Lots of areas think about that and make PowerPoint demos about that. What we've started doing about the last 6 to 12 months is actually try and make this for real. And one of the things that we were quite pleased and surprised is how relatively easy it is to do just by going to Mappings. 44 quid, BTT, BCI card, Linux box, various distros, latest cards, and fairly good support for all of the standard BTT cards, and we can start to play. Backstage, the internet version has been going for a wee while now. We are currently looking at how we can get involved. Get people like yourselves in bedrooms or in small companies or large web shops or indeed in interactive TV television shops involved. There's a large amount of work that's going on for interactive TV on Sky and on cable. There's very little that we see for stuff on DTT. DTT excites us a lot because it's the way that people are going to get TV in this country, predominantly free to air, once we get switch off. It's fun because there's various tools available. What does that mean? I mean, it's still relatively theoretical, but when it becomes practical is when you have a box on your desk or in your lounge at home, which can record a hell of a lot of television, way more than a PDR like Sky Plus or a PDR like TiVo, way more. That really starts to change how TV works, what it is, what happens when you miss something. So I hand over to the Ludlams now, who are going to demonstrate their some of this in action.
Can we flip the source of power? Give a brief history. You had black and white back in the 40s, and then you had
an event that was a catalyst for a lot of people to uptake buy TVs for the very first time. You then had ITV, which was the first time you had a competition in channels, and people had a choice about what they wanted to watch, and scheduling came into effect, that the idea that you could compete with someone else at a particular time to grab people's attention. Then the 65 lines, which was the precursor to colour, and it was the first major upgrade part of the TV. Then colour happened, and then everyone got on board after that. And more and latterly, you've had videos in the 80s, and interestingly with that, that VHS, the format that came out, was pushed as more of a time-shifting, the Philips at the time and Betamax were more pushing for a time-shift kind of aspect to what videos would do for the home than VHS. VHS went down the route of having getting movies on VHS that you can go and rent to the video shop and rent. And that was a big win that really didn't, no one, far more people used it as a vehicle for watching movies in the evening than did well to record things. It was very hard to record, then it was very hard to record.
What do you call?
Yes, that's true. Video Plus came along as an effort to try and sort of help people work out how to do with their video recorders, and it was reasonably successful. And then latterly, the important things are that TiVo and Replay TV came along where they had relatively small hard drives, and for the first time you could time shift programs and record things direct to disk rather than to a tape. And so where are we now? We are, Freeview is very widespread in the UK, it's got a lot of coverage. We have Linux drivers for all of the major DVD cards you can get, and a single hard drive of that size is 400 gigabytes in size. That's quite crucial, because a lot of this hinged upon that drive being released, that density being achieved. But throughout all of this, what has not happened? What has not changed about TV? Well, it's the scheduling. It's the idea that it's a stream that you use, you dip into, and you come out of. You may be able to record the old program here or there, but you have to deliberately set up a TiVo or whatever box you want in to go up and record it. You may record it regularly, but you have to tell it to do it. It's something that you it doesn't guess for you, or it can, but that's not there. It's not as wide as it can be. So you can now shift the entire stream. That the idea is that you actually don't care about recording individual programs. You record it all. You record the entire thing, the transport stream, as it comes down, and you put it on disk, and then keep it around, and for as much storage as you've got, you then get rid of it. And that really is a radical change in terms of how you interact with your TV, that it's much more of a change than disc recording of a particular program to disc that you know it's going to be there. This will have things you don't know are there. This really does say, take the entire concept of Tuesday's work of output and keep it on disc, and you can go visit it whenever you want. So I think we should do a little bit of demo now. Right,
should we switch it back to Dr. Who? Do you want to do this one? Sure. Here it is, Dr. Who. Maybe switch back to... But then we have the system. Here it is, the live demo. This system is recording everything. It hasn't met for the past 7 days. It has five channels. Throughout which you can go back any time. You can sit down and choose any time in that past time. Pick a program and watch it. Here they are. This is last Friday, Doctor Who we've been watching. So already, we watched a program that was broadcast last Friday. We can go back. And we go back. Anytime. All the way back to last Saturday. All these programs we have available to us. That's BBC 3, BBC 2, BBC 1, BBC News 24, TVBC, BBC, and BBC 4. Any programme in the past 7 days, you can pick. So let's say you used to sit down to watch the 10 o'clock news on BBC 1. Well, you used to be a capacity to make sure you get there and sit down in front of the TV, put that 10 o'clock and watch it. And now you play. You sit down when you've got 3 minutes, you can go through, flick through the programmes, and watch BBC News at 10 o'clock. There it is. From here, it's actually shifting the entire multiplex, it's just shifting the entire channel. So from here, we can switch to BBC 2. And we're still Thursday, 10 o'clock. If you missed a bit, if you're chopping into the program, it doesn't matter. You can wind it back before you start recording. And you keep going back in 5 seconds until you got to last week. So from here, here is the ultimate in time shifting. Don't have to set anything up. You don't have to go out and have someone say, oh, you know, are you going to watch something over tonight? Well, it doesn't matter. You can watch it when you get back home. And this actually changes the way you might want to watch programmes in the future as well. So now you've got a free moment. You sit down in front of your TV and you say, what's available? So now you've got a collection of 1,500 programmes that you can sort of choose from that were broadcast over the past week. And you want to find something that's perhaps, instead of looking for a particular time and saying what we broadcast here on this channel and on this time, I want to watch a movie. So we can search these programmes through categories as well. So if I want to watch an entertainment programme, we can go back and say, Titanic, I don't know when it's broadcast, follow or not, and here it is. So it's basically a revolution in TV. You no longer have to sit down and care what time. You sit down and you choose, serve me some interesting content.
There's a little bit I want to talk about the kind of areas that this then touches on. But what does this mean? It has implications for how, as Dominic said, how you sift through all this stuff. 1,500 programs is a lot to press the right button and scroll through your XY grid. And really, you maybe are only interested in the prime time doing, sort of 6 till 10 or whatever it is. It also changes the fact that TV is this sort of subconscious clock that you have running in your house that really you time events by it. Slowly but surely that's being eroded by TiVo and the concept that particular programs that you want to watch that you set up are there at your disposal. But this totally removes the notion about time for a stream. And then it then subsequently has an effect on what programs are broadcast, where and to whom you can broadcast. Interestingly, the genre stuff is already seen with podcasting, but you browse by tags and you look at the description and the program name, but really it's all about this sort of collection of keywords that are assigned to programs. And although this exists in TV, there's currently a project underway called TV Anytime at the moment, which is to elaborate on the metadata that is broadcast with stream. So a couple of the scenarios that you can now have with this is this. So if you recorded it anyway, whether you wanted it or not, or you didn't know about it until now, it's there anyway. Really, it's that you never ever have to program this thing to record anything you want at all. It just does it. And for as much hard drive space as you've got N weeks of worth of TV across however many channels you want. And then the other scenario is, what if you come across a program but part one's already been broadcast? Well, you can shift back a week and watch that program now, and then watch the second part that's broadcast as you're watching the first one. It's really that you've got a gigantic buffer there in which to view your programs. And then another interesting one is that you start not to care about certain things. when it was on. So what is daytime TV? If you've got the ability to shift it all, it doesn't matter actually when it arrived on your box, as long as it's there, it's a feed. It drips programs into this pot. So you then don't care whether it's BBC One or Two. It doesn't matter. It may be repeated. It really is not important to you how it got there. And then the logical sort of extrapolation of that is that you actually don't care who broadcasted it, be it ITV or BBC or Channel 4. It doesn't matter. It's actually the content that you're interested in, not the manner in which it got there, not the whether it's got adverts or whatever. You know, that it arrives in your box and you watch it and then it gets deleted and you move on to the next episode. So it really has a very far-reaching ramifications about the nature of the TV screen that we have and scheduling. And this is part of what George was talking about. So we put up a little bit of a website about this box, and it's at that URL, cross.tv, if you want to have a quick look. It's just a placeholder right now, but we should be putting up some information about what this box represents shortly. Thank you.
Steve Joy, I work at BBC R&D, and I'm going to talk to you first about some of the open technologies that have been developing at R&D, many of which you may have seen on our demo stand upstairs, which will also be made after this talk, so you'll have a little bit of time to really see them. And Larry has been trying to persuade you to do backstage.bbc style stuff with the content that we broadcast rather than just the stuff which we distribute by the internet. So, I'm going to start with talking about Virac, which is the thing you're most likely to have heard of, to be honest. It's a new video codec, which we're developing in BBC R&D in collaboration with people from the open source community. It's free. You can download it from SourceForge under your choice of user-friendly license. It's patents and royalty-free, and the asterisk next to the word patent there means that, yes, there are some aspects of it that we at BBC have patented, but they're licensed to anyone who wants to use them on a royalty-free basis. And it's comparable in quality to the best of its competitors, so Microsoft's Windows Media Line, for example, or PMA for ABC codec, and it is, as I mentioned, free. So why on earth would the BBC want to develop an open source video codec? And the first and foremost reason is that we want to spend our money on programs, not on encoding video to send to people. And pretty much all the existing codecs require royalties. We want to distribute our programs as efficiently as possible, which means we want to use the best coding technology available. So we want to best develop that codec ourselves on our own terms, but obtaining help from other interested parties. And finally, we want it to be open source because we want the license payer, who after all is funding all this work, to be able to use the software that they pay for. Here are some potential uses for Dirac. Within the BBC, we would like the Creative Archive, which you've probably heard of, to be based around Dirac. Creative Archive is the idea that a lot of the BBC's older content, especially natural stuff, would be made available for anyone in the UK to reuse and repurpose, make it for programs, etc. Obviously, for news, for distributing video from news gallery teams back to the studio, Dirac would be an attractive royalty-free option. And also, if you want distribution video, I'm sure everyone here is still having to download a real player to watch news clips on the BBC website. It would be fantastic if we could do that in a slightly less real player oriented fashion. And also for signing for deaf people on television. If you've watched News 24 recently, you'll notice that for about an hour every afternoon, all of a sudden the picture shrinks to 2 thirds of its size, and a strange man appears waving his arms around. Now, we have a commitment within the BBC to provide signing for our deaf viewers. But at the same time, we don't want to annoy non-deaf people by forcing them to put up with signing. So we would like to use what's called closed signing, where you can turn on or off the little man as you wish. But broadcasting pictures of a little man would require a So we'd like to use direct route and broadcast the closed signing either within the broadcast stream or the internet in a bandwidth efficient manner. And that is currently ongoing project at R&D to see whether we can do that. So there has been interest in direct from industry. I can't mention specific names, but a number of very large technology and broadcast companies have expressed the interest in incorporating direct into some of their products. And at home, it's possible that direct will appear in the set-top box at some point. It's possible that the screensaver on the laptop will come on. And obviously, in your home PBRs, you may wish to use direct to reduce the amount of space that the programs you record take up. And obviously, direct open source, you can use it as a video codec in any software you get right. So, I'm not going to say very much about the technology. That's because it's very complicated and I don't actually understand it for myself. The key difference between direct and existing codecs is that it uses wavelets. Now, I'm not going to say anything about how wavelets work, I'm going to say they make pictures look like that. So rather than blocky pictures, which you get when if you switch on your video box and go to your TV and stare at it closely, you can see that the picture shows lots of blocking and no artifacts. Direct doesn't give you blocks, it gives you kind of blurred, smooth bits instead, which for moving pictures look a lot nicer. Version compensation, that's a technique where the codec looks at the difference between two frames and tries to work out whether bits of the picture have moved or not, and then takes that into account to reduce the actual amount of information that needs to be generated. And then arithmetic coding is a packing method which takes the encoded stream and packs it as efficiently as possible, minimizing redundancy. And those three tools, tools is the technical term for those things, those three tools are basically the sum of the app, and its simplicity is one of the things which makes it so attractive. So some of the software which already supports the app, VLC, mPlayer, with a patch which you can download from the website, Windows Media Player, if you download our direct directory filter, FFmpeg and Transcoded, both the patches. And we've done the best we can to make adding support for other players as simple as possible. There's a simple C-based API and this code is documentation available on the website. So if your favorite media player is not yet supported, then please feel free to consider any magic support for it. The future for direct. By September, we will hope to have real-time playback and TV quality video on a PC. By the end of 2005, Direct will go beta, and what that means is that the bitstream format will be fixed, so if you encode to Direct with one version of the codec, then you'll be able to decode it with any future version. And then in 2006, we hope to have a release quality version, which it's hard to define when the product hits 1.0, because of course the development will probably continue. But that's the point where we can say, yes, this is now perfectly usable in any environment we can think of. And we will probably standardize Direct to W3C, so it will be an open, publicly available free standard for Direct and how it works. And yes, we do want help. We've had a fantastic response from people wanting to contribute to the project up from outside the BBC already. But if you can write software or documentation or generally be equipment enthusiastic, then we'd love to have you help us. And if you want more info, then that's the Direct home page there. You can find out more than you wanted to know. So I'm going to talk very briefly about the media. Michael Sparks, who is sitting in the audience, gave a lovely talk about it in one of the earlier sessions today. Comedia is a Python-based framework for creating highly modular concurrent applications. So think about Unix pipes and piping together from the Unix shell, but in a much more flexible fashion. It was designed as a testbed for large-scale need for delivery protocols, but it is genuinely useful in the sense that we could use it for pretty much any application we can think of. Again, it's an open source piece of software, and again, it's built in open source tools. And again, there's a growing community of people who are interested in the project, and we would love to you to be involved with that if you feel so inclined. Now, the open technologies we develop in the BBC are not limited to stuff which would be of interest to consumers. The chances are that unless you work in the broadcast industry, the media dispatch protocol will never be installed on your computer. But this is a protocol which we're developing within the broadcast industry to get around the problem of having to send large video files between broadcasters using motorbikes. But we feel that networks will be a more efficient technology. So again, this is a network protocol being developed collaboratively. For what it's worth, it uses an XML manifest to describe the transfer of files, give the details of what will be transferred, by what protocol, between what two machines, with what security, etc., etc. And there will be an open source reference implementation available by September, and if you want more information about that, then there's a website link for you there. And all those projects, and many more, you can find listed on a relatively brand spanking new open source website. At that link, and hopefully that website will continue to grow as those of us who write software within the BBC can say, persuade our bosses that going open source is the future. Okay, now the second part of my talk is about digital TV hacks. I'm sure a lot of people were here for the BBC Backstage launch earlier, and where you learn that BBC is very keen for you to take its online content and do fantastically cool things with it. Well, we make content available in other ways than on the web, of course. We can broadcast television on other ways. So I'm going to start by talking briefly about what makes up EBB Norman's play. EBB is digital TV broadcasting, and it's the family of standards by which digital television is broadcast in the UK on terrestrial cable and satellite. And the fundamental unit of digital video broadcasting is the multiplex, which contains several digital TV channels. And certainly, as far as terrestrial is concerned, one digital multiplex tends to take out the same amount of bandwidth as one old analog television channel. So within each DVB multiplex, you have a number of TV channels and some extra stuff like the EPG. And associated with each television channel, you have a number of services. Obviously, you have video and audio. As an addition, you have audio description, which is a service for partially sighted people, whereby when there's not much dialogue happening, a commentator reads out a description of what's happening on screen. Subtitles generally broadcast, certainly with BBC programs, and often increasingly there's some form of interactive application that accompanies the program. So if you want to hack away at the stuff we broadcast, you're going to need to get into one of these transport streams. Now there's three ways of doing this. The cheapest, easiest, and simplest way is to get a Mac in, buy yourself a PCR USB EU card, and plug it into your spare Linux PC. There's a compatibility list for Linux at that URL. The second way, which is the way I tend to use personally, just because of the equipment we have in my home, is to take a suitable PVR. Now, the only one I actually know of is the Brookfield TF5800, but that's a PVR with a USB size on the back, which you can copy the raw transport stream files off straight onto your PC. You can then play them back directly in VLC and certain other media players, where you can transcode them or burn them to DVD or whatever. Or you can do call apps on them. And the third option is some set-top boxes, which are eminently hackable, such as the Dreambox, which is basically a cell phone Linux box with a digital terrestrial receiver. Once you've got your transport stream, you're going to need to process it somehow. In my experience, the most flexible tool available at the moment is something called Project X, which is a Java application that can take a transport stream input and split out some of those components and save them in a number of useful formats. You also have the option of using the DVB tools, which I've not personally investigated much, but which intends to be command line tools for processing transport streams. And there's also a tool called PVA Streamento, which is not so useful. It turns an MPEG transport stream into an MPEG program stream, which makes it easier to play back on in terms of media players, but it's not so useful for hacking. So here's an example hack. I actually have this running, not live, but in pseudo real time upstairs in the corner where we're doing demos. You start off with your DVB transport stream, which comes from a television transmitter, obviously, and you capture that somehow and process it to extract subtitles. Now, unfortunately, from my perspective, subtitles on digital television are broadcast as bitmaps, where obviously the processing would be a lot handier than text format. So, with a little thought, I eventually found GOCR, which is about as good as it gets as far as open source OCR software goes. And you run your subtitles through that, and you get a reasonable approximation to the text from which they're generated. Now, in this case, I then took those subtitles and fed them straight into PySpy, which you may have come across. It's been featured on /.org so twice, most recently in the context of plotting social networks and Shakespeare. But what it does is it plots social networks. A social network is a graph which shows relationships between entities. Now, in the case of the graph you can see there, I have a large version on the next slide. This is the first social network diagram for the French Grand Prix, which was a month or two ago now. And what the entities in the graph are the teams and drivers in the race, and links are drawn between them showing the strength of the relationship, where the relationship refers to anything which could have had an effect on the outcome of the race. Now that's the interpretation. Generating it was simple. I fed the subtitles from the commentary into the application, and then told it to look for the coincidence of two or more entities within the same sentence. So that's a very, very simple case. You get an interesting result, which those who follow Formula One closely assure me bears some resemblance to the actual nature of the race. Those are the two tools beyond what we talked about, as I mentioned, the hack pipeline, and also a quick hack streaming library and visualization code, which will eventually be that URL that is not quite yet in the releasable state. My colleague Gareth Smith and I were until 2 o'clock this morning getting something demoed. So, of the various components of the broadcast stream that I talked about earlier, let's start by thinking about UBG data. And these are just some sample ideas which we came up with in a half-hour brainstorming session. So much like Ben was talking about earlier, this is far from exhausted, and the cool ideas you get to come up. So, for example, you can track TV trends, possibly done in the TV, if that's your bag, by looking at the intermittent words in UBG data, or you can watch the TV personality top 10. Or you can implement proper-mouth TV, and send any program featuring your most hated TV personality straight to dead null. Then there's the possibility of taking TV content and watching it in new ways. If you took the soundtrack and the audio description track, which I was talking about earlier, and mix them together, you end up with a list of podcasts and the TV program that you listen to in the library. Or you could create a subtitle-triggered slideshow. Every time the subtitles change, you take a screenshot, and streaming those together and end up with a very low bandwidth version of TV program that you can watch on devices which can't stream video, can't play audio, but can show pictures. Obviously, you've got the option of transcoding your TV stream to direct text or, of course, DUAC, and watching it on devices which can't play video, which don't have much capacity. Or you can create your own extra highlights of the TV program by searching through the subtitles for keywords, and then taking maybe 10 seconds of audio and video from either side. Or you can automatically create yourself your own scrapbook TV program containing every single bit of TV in the last week about Pony. Awesome. So, some more cool stuff to do. This top one's got a leading suggestion. You may have noticed that in all of the open source PBR packages available, Fonz TV, Myth TV, whatever, there is no capability for watching interactive television. This is because there's no open source interpreter available for interactive television. The only interpreters available have to be licensed from the manufacturers for extortionate amounts of money. So if anybody wants to do something competitive for television watching humanity, an open source interpreter for interactive TV would be very helpful to do. Then you can extract recipes from the subtitles of a good program and feed them to your robotic kitchen, which I assume you all know. This is 2005 after all. Or you can run beat detection algorithms to get soundtracks. Look for parts of the soundtracks which the beat detection algorithms actually give you a beat count, and then use that to detect music, extract it, and then do whatever you want with it. You can run a cut detector on TV programs and determine how pacey they are in the cafe, and then enroll the PBR. In your PBR, you can choose to watch TV based on your mood. Or you can run stress analysis of one of the soundtracks and create politicians of life. Not that politicians of a lot, who knows? So that's about the blog review. If you want further information, the BBC open source website is the source for all your open source BBC needs. BBC Research and Development is the part of the BBC I work for. You can find information about the projects I've talked about and all the other stuff that we do. I've talked about quite the central stuff that we do. That's our website, bbc.co.uk/rd. We have a general purpose email address for any general information you have. And of course, you're welcome to contact me about anything I've talked about, and that's my email address at the top of the screen. That's all.
Digital boxes are not connected to any sort of network, they're just passive devices which receive
receive information. So these work in the same way. The second is that we kind of want to keep it just broadcast at the moment, because that allows it, for example, for to be used in portable devices that might never have a net connection, but might be, you know, at some point in the future, improving transmissions or much better than that, that they might be able to pick up TV or wouldn't then be able to get on the net.
Two quick questions back there. DRM, has that been considered a positive one? And secondly, streaming, you mentioned that it could be used for streaming. Are you going to release some sort of information for streaming service?
Okay. I assume we're talking about digital rights.
Yeah.
Do I think just video codec? There's no reason why you couldn't back to the DRM if you wanted to, as far as I do, BBC has an advantage to it. And your second question is,
if you're going to do a stream, presumably you will write some sort of stream server, and you can do that with the system.
That's an interesting question.
Yes.
It's not in that.
Put it this way, you wrote DIVAC because there was no comparable solution available in BBC's terms. If that was the case for a streaming server, then we would say it's going to be on those as well. But if there's a solution out there, then we would use that instead. I don't know what decision is going to be made.
So,
I've wrapped
my brain
for
a way
to phrase
this as a question, but I can't even come up with it specifically, so I'm just going to make a brief comment. The DVB, the Digital Video Broadcasters Forum, that runs the standards that all the digital television that we just is built on, has over the last 3 or 4 years been almost completely co-opted by Motion Picture Studios from America, and their executives have been taken over by American motion picture executives. They've struck a committee called the Copy Protection Content Management Group that is building a standard that would require that all implementations of DVB receivers be designed to resist end-user modification, so you couldn't implement anything that received a digital television signal or sat downstream and received a web receiver and open source or free software. And finally, they conceived of an elaborate restrictions vocabulary that can be applied to programs, so you can say things in a program like, only allow this program to be watched within a household, so they require all devices to detect whether they are inside or outside of the household that the initial device received it from, or don't allow this to be watched on more than one screen, or don't allow this to be watched more than once, or for more than 24 hours, or what have you. And there's a genuine danger. If there's anyone in the room who works for a company that's a DVD member, or anyone who works for a company that might find 10,000 euros to join the DVD and work on this, I'd be very happy to talk with them.
Just one quick point. I noticed a few people scribbled out hastily whizzed through this slide. If anyone's interested in the PDR box with the USB port on the back, it's a top field TF5800. It has 160 gig busy and it costs about 300 quid. No, I don't want it for them. The box that you were showing earlier, any idea how long you might take until something like that actually comes on the market and how much it would cost, and whether if something like that was actually sold by the BBC, you allowed it to have something like an internet connection to allow basically the movies and whatever to be taken on through another machine?
Well, in terms of cost, it's roughly comparable to a plasma screen, say. So it's a few thousand pounds right now. Obviously, as hard drive, the major cost of that is the storage. So as the storage drops, so the sort of cost. As far as it being a product, that's an interesting one. We don't know at the moment what the state of the market is in terms of payments and the field to do with the legality of this as well. So it's a bit of a minefield right now. But we are looking at that, and
a bit of media.
Yeah.
What we do in Interactive TV is we work 99% of the services that we provide are dealt with either by Sky or the cable codes or free DVD, and that's quite
what we've been doing, as I said, in the last 6 to 12 months is doing stuff just because we can. So if we tried to pose this as a device that we could sell 12 months ago, it would have seemed quite bizarre, quite far off. And such a shift compared to TiVo or video recorder. And so I think we're still exploring, to be honest, before we begin to think about any of those questions.
Would you agree with that?
We're asking anyone else who's interested, what's to do next? And I think that we're going to keep doing that before we start thinking about any of those questions.
I think
I'm going to
have any questions. I'd like to point out that all the presentations made